What is up, you guys, and welcome to the Beneath the Armor podcast, where we discuss what goes on beneath the metaphorical armor we put on every single day to mask as typical functional humans when really we are all just big weirdos deep down inside. We talk about mental health, how we really feel, we get into the nitty-gritty feelings of what it means to be a human being. So thank you so much for being here on today's episode. I'm excited to have you. Hello, friends. Welcome back to the Beneath the Armor podcast. I am Alex, and I'm so excited. This is going to be amazing to be on with my coach and friend, Chris Murphy. I'm so pumped to have you here. And I want to lay a little backstory for our guests listening to this about who you are and then let you talk to your story. But I'm too hyped to not blow some smoke up your ass. And to everyone listening, Chris does not like blowing smoke up his own ass. I'm going to do it for him because he's an incredibly special human. And just like, Chris is, first of all, a father of three young boys, which is no joke. Like, let's just talk about that for what it is. Chris is an amazing, amazing father, has an incredible backstory in the fitness industry and with competitiveness in strongman and a slew of sports and fitness experience. But besides what he does for a living and who he is as a father, Chris is a highly empathetic, sensitive man who's just one of the most wholehearted humans I've ever met. He affectionately refers to the people who work with him as the Huggernauts, and he is a unicorn of a human, just magic blowing out of his ass in terms of sparkles and joy and like just a big hug of a human. Chris and I met at a CrossFit Kids course a few years ago, hit it off right away. And we really, really connected with not only our love for the sport at the time, but more so it was working with kids and communicating with kids and their experience of sports, athleticism, and how to make fitness more accessible, really, and just fun for that community. So I'm really, really grateful to have Chris on here. He's just, again, an amazing human. So thank you for being here, Chris.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to have this chat.
This is amazing.
I'm all shoulders and elbows right now after all that smoke getting blown at me. I'm just like, okay, all right, positive things. Just sit in the pocket. You can do this.
Compliments are hard, Matt. Yeah. Compliments are so tough. Totally.
Well, it's so much easier to direct that energy outwards, but when it's on you, you're just like, oh, okay, all right. I'm being, singled out this way. I don't know how to react.
I think that's so relatable, especially to people who do listen to this podcast, though, because you are an empath. You are highly like sensitive and emotional and loving and caring. And you've been raised in a way from what I understand in our conversations prior to this podcast, where accepting compliments is not comfortable for you. And you are speaking the love language of so many people who listen to this. Like, compliments are hard for us as the people who have been in charge, as the people who have been caregivers and who have taken care of those around us. So I totally appreciate that it's uncomfortable for you, but I want you to know that you are so loved.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah, the one thing that's really cool, when we started talking about what this podcast was going to be about, I was thinking a lot about like where it is that I came from in terms of, being more empathetic and I guess being more sensitive than average. And the one thing that is really cool is the environment in which I was raised, where, my dad, I've been listening to this podcast a whole lot and learning a lot more about your background when it comes to athleticism and things like that, where athleticism was expected of you. And my dad remains athletic. My younger brother, he was dyed in the wool hockey player from the very beginning. My mom did, cheerleading and fun stuff like that in high school, but never really stuck with anything beyond that. But I was never forced to do anything specifically athletic. I was always set up in a position where I could go wherever it is that I wanted. If I wanted to try gymnastics or karate or soccer or whatever it was. But the first thing that actually stuck was theater. And the thing that was cool is you would think like, so my dad has always had just enormous legs and he's brutally strong. And he got these enormous legs and became brutally strong from doing ice dancing. And he was a national competitor, traveled around the world. And ice dancing is not inherently the most traditionally masculine endeavor. But consequently, his take on it is strength is strength, athleticism is athleticism, and your worth in a competitive field is exactly commensurate with your, you know, your competency and your ability to put out. And so, you know, consequently, when I get into theater as a kid, and then you get all the, you know, the smart mouths on the playground who want to give me their opinion on what boys in theater are like, it didn't register to me, because it's just like, no, this is what I want to do. And then that eventually moved on into to football and everything else. And so, yeah, it was the thing that's always been really nice is with my family, we're allowed to feel our feelings out loud and communicate about that thing, about where we're at with that. And so I think that's, you know, that's certainly carried forward into what I do for a living.
Oh, that makes my heart so happy to hear. And I really appreciate you sharing that, because it's so counterintuitive and different from how athleticism may be like experienced by young male identifying people and humans. And it's something that I didn't bring up at the start of this podcast, just to kind of paint the picture for anyone who doesn't know Chris and hasn't seen Chris more so, is Chris is, are you 6'4" or 5?
6'4".
Chris is 6'4" and a tree, like just like a tree, like literally just a thick, muscly, strong man. I'm flexing on camera right now to convey your strength. No one's going to see that. And like tattooed and just, you look like, to stereotype for a hot minute, like the stereotypical gym bro. Like you are who people picture at the gym lifting weights. And to, this is why I'm so hyped for this conversation, is hearing about your childhood and your experience with being able to try any activity you wanted, and that never being like nothing ever being talked about as traditionally masculine or feminine or a girl or boy sport or activity or whatever, is so, so beautiful. And ultimately what we're going to start to dig into today. So how did, like, where do we even start? What happened from there in your childhood? How did you get into lifting, and what was your experience like in lifting to begin with?
So, started off, like, growing up, I was always the fat kid. And, you know, I never totally felt comfortable in my body. And I never felt that my body belonged in whatever it was I was doing. When I was playing hockey or soccer or whatever it was, no one ever said or did anything to make me aware of how my shape differed from anybody else. But it was something that I was always painfully aware of. And one thing that I only just had been for the first time this morning to the 6 a.m. class was the real reason why I started playing football when I was 13 is that's the only sport that I readily identified where big fat guys are welcome. And so jumped into football. And what ended up happening is I felt a little bit more comfortable because there were more people who were shaped like me. And then I had one conditioning coach who is a retired Marine Corps sergeant. I'm going to get that rank wrong, but he was the quintessential drill sergeant. And he, like, I came in there, I was fat and I was weak and I was slow. He never harped on me for being fat, but he did harp on me if I was slower than everybody else or if I was demonstrating mental weakness, because he could identify if I was falling short of my capacity. So rather than getting up in my face and saying, you're worthless because you're fat, weak, and slow, it's like, you have to try harder. You're letting the team down. And so what ended up happening from there is I thought, what happens if I try? You know, because that's a difficult endeavor when you're 13 to 15, especially as a boy. The one thing that you never want to have happen is you never want to get caught trying and fail. But if you can say, oh, the reason why I failed is I didn't really care, then you have that, you know, built-in excuse of ambivalence. But then I started to try. And the more that I tried, consequently, the better I got and the less negative reinforcement I was getting from that coach, Tim. He eventually said, hey, let's get you lifting some weights during one of the off seasons. And then very quickly, yeah, he was my first weightlifting coach. Very quickly, I fell in love with lifting heavy things. Because, you know, like when you're going for a run and you're saying, I have to make it to that lamppost or else I'm going to die.
Yes. Yes, I do.
That happens to me in the rare instances that I'm actually going for a run. But for me, I'm always like, I want to, like, I'm doing 40 pound dumbbells right now. I want to get to 45. And then once I'm at 45, I want to get to 50. And I always wanted that progressive overload. And then the more that I stuck with that, with football and weightlifting, the more I enjoyed the lifting part, the less I enjoyed the football. And then eventually quit football just because I wasn't getting a return on the investment. It wasn't that fun anymore. And then from there, you know, from just lifting weights, did the bodybuilding thing into powerlifting, moved into jujitsu. And then from jujitsu, found CrossFit. CrossFit eventually led to strongman. And that's where I'm at right now. And so like the one cool thing about it is this, that another part where our stories are parallel is that we got introduced to the gym and the training environment as a result of a different sport. But the more time we spent in that weight room, we realized, oh, this is the fun part. And I went into that environment. I would not I don't recall there being a weight set in the basement when I was growing up. So this was not something that was new to me. But when I discovered that first rush of, I can now bench press, say, two plates, or I unlocked some physical capacity that I didn't think was possible before, I loved that so much that all I wanted to do was show it to other people. Like, look at how good this feels.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. And it sounds like it wasn't so much the sport, like it wasn't football, but what you said we have in common, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it's like the feeling of, look what I have personally accomplished. That's not for anyone else, but I now feel like strong and capable and empowered and like just a superhero, like just so fierce through lifting, which I think is so like wonderful. Is that how?
And then what ends up happening is, like, when I was lifting for aesthetics as a bodybuilder, I've got body dysmorphia. It's one thing, like, I've never felt comfortable in my body. I'm closer now than I've ever been. But when I was lifting specifically for aesthetics, the amount of love and appreciation that I had for my body, the way that it looked and the way it could perform, was never lower because I always wanted to be a little bit different. But then once I found the love of, you know, lifting for performance or just trying to achieve something else, then now all of a sudden the worth and value of my body wasn't expressed in the way that it looked or the way that it filled out a t-shirt or if I wasn't wearing a t-shirt. Instead, it was, this is something that we're all built with the same hardware. We've got the same number of muscles. We're working with, you know, the same environmental conditions. And I had through my mental focus, I've been able to unlock this. So, you know, I wouldn't consider myself to be by any means a naturally gifted athlete, but I'm just persistent. And people getting their bodies to the point where it does looks and performs the way that is going to make them feel more comfortable is so much closer than they would think. And the juice is always worth the squeeze on that one.
I couldn't agree more. And I'm really grateful for you bringing that up because I think a lot of our self-worth, especially in the fitness industry, is placed on how you look. Can we count your abs? Literally is like the level of our worth. We're more worthy the more six packs we have like available to us. And that's not it for you by the sounds of it. It's again, almost like completing a school project you're really proud of and you are proud of it. You're like, I did this. I did this hard work. You say this all the time in class, but you chose initial discomfort, and it doesn't mean it's still not incredibly uncomfortable. Sometimes it is, but you moved through that psychological and physical discomfort and showed yourself just something that you can do. Like it sounds so empowering and so wonderful.
And it to give people that sense of empowerment and self-love when it comes to it, like when it comes to social media, when you start to see the people, like there are always going to be the people who are posting those thirst trap pictures. And that's one thing. But when you start to see the people who are showing pictures with their shirts off, or like maybe they're posing in their pictures and they're showing the best lifts of the day. This, certainly there's a lot of narcissism that comes along with posting that stuff on social media. But as the guy who posts, you know, I put something on my story today where, you know, I'm not wearing much of a shirt and I'm lifting a lot of weight.
And you're wearing a crop top. Hang on. You're wearing a crop top, which is amazing, by the way.
But I'm not doing that. Like, I'm not framing this in a way. I'm not dressed this way for you or for anyone else. I'm not posting this because I'm trying to brag. I'm posting this because I'm proud of what I've done. And this is something that I want to share. And then, like, specifically when it comes to like crop tops, the other thing that I like to do is I like wearing booty shorts. And the reason why I like wearing booty shorts is because they are incredibly functional pieces of equipment. There's this great meme that I wish would take off at large in the fitness industry, which is wear the damn shorts. So booty shorts, crop tops, totally functional pieces of equipment when you're working out. Especially as a coach, if you're wearing booty shorts, I know exactly where your pelvis is. If you're wearing a crop top, I can figure out the relationship of your rib cage to your hips. And okay, so maybe you're showing more skin than you normally would, but if it's functional and it makes you empowered and you feel like a badass in the process, fucking do it. Like the booty shorts, like when, you know, if a girl's wearing booty shorts in the gym, fellas, that's not for you. That's for her. If I'm wearing booty shorts in the gym, that's not for you. That's for me. And when we can just say, like, this is my body and I am proud of it, and whichever direction you choose to pursue that, just celebrate, throw yourself a damn parade.
I love that. I'm going to like say that one more time because I think so many people probably need to hear it. It's like, wear what you want. It's for you. And to anyone else who's ever like subconsciously or otherwise internally judged or externally judged someone for their appearance at the gym, how they look is not for you. Everyone is just doing the best they can. Everyone is showing up and presenting however they want to. And wear the damn shorts. If you want to wear booty shorts, who cares? If you want to wear basketball shorts, who cares? If you want to wear a garbage bag and sweatpants, I love that for you. If you're cool with it, I wanted to circle back to something you said a while back, admittedly, in the conversation, but really hit for me. And I think ties so beautifully in with this concept of like presentation and masculinity, femininity, or being a human. And you'd mentioned that your coach, your football coach, didn't care about you being fat or how you looked, but it was about how you showed up. And you said something that really hit hard for me, which was, it was about your performance and as long as you like worked hard. And this might hit a little hard, so I'm really intrigued by your answer, but feel free to take some time to think on it. Is, what did failure look like to you, and how was it received? As someone who identifies as male and like looks the way you do now, what does failure look like to you in a fitness capacity?
So the biggest issue that I have with myself, in preparing for this podcast, I thought really deeply about everything. And the one thing that I can say confidently about myself is I've always known who I am. I haven't always loved that part. And, you know, through a lot of therapy and a lot of, you know, really positive relationships that have bloomed over the past, you know, 2 years, I'm really starting to come into that. My expectations for myself have been unfairly high in a lot of aspects. And so what failure ends up looking like is falling short of what I know that I'm capable of and what's fair. And that's where I tend to lose perspective. So I'll give you an example. Right now I'm training for strongman, and I'm going to be competing at the official strongman games in Daytona, Florida. I just did a deadlift session this morning. There's going to be a deadlift event there where the first bar weighs 585 pounds. The last bar weighs 735 pounds. That is 100 pounds more than anything I've ever picked up off the floor. And this is an event that is really intimidating for me, because I'm not going to do well. As far as strongman is concerned, I'm not very strong. I'm like, I can move things, like when it comes to a yoke or a transport, I can do that. But a lot of that has to do with my conditioning. But in terms of raw strength, I have two things going for me. Number one, not gifted in that way. At 6'4", my levers are very long. And then secondly, I am a drug-free athlete. I don't use steroids, never have, never will. That's my own personal prerogative. But where I am at is today I was hoping to deadlift 645 pounds. That would have been a personal record. I ended up getting stuck at 630. Now, that is a lot of weight. It's less than what I was hoping for. And I was really frustrated with myself because that I failed a rep. And then what ends up happening is I cascade forward and everything avalanches. Well, if I miss this, then I'm going to miss that lift and everything is going to go south that way. And if I were to throw my belt down, say, okay, I'm not strong enough for this. I'm going to fail. And that's all there is to it. And I walk away from that deadlift bar and don't come back to it. That part's the failure. But if I can just say, okay, I missed that lift. It like, you know, I'm still feeling the squats from Monday. This has always been a tough event for me. I did the best that I could. Maybe I didn't hit the number, but I at the very least can walk away from the session with what I was looking to achieve, which in this case is I just need to get a little bit better. It, like, I'm not going to deadlift 735 pounds in 6 weeks, not even close. But I'm going to try really hard to get there. So for me as a person and what I look at, you know, in terms of anyone trying to pursue a particular goal, hitting numbers, hitting shapes, that's not right or wrong, pass or fail. It's just, can we make a couple fewer mistakes today than we did last time? Can we get 1% better today than we were yesterday? And letting one shortcoming, one missed progressive step define the entire session, define your entire day, month, year, so and so on. That to me registers as failure.
When you let it get to you, but like, yeah. Got it, understood. And this is hard. There's a lot of nuance in this topic, in this conversation, because there's the like masculinity approach to it. There's also the performance aspect. And the reality is you are performing on an extremely competitive, like, that's amazing, by the way. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Congratulations on being strong as fuck and being a badass. I love that for you. like, we're talking about a performance stage, like social comparison, inner critic work. There's a lot going on there. And so, in keeping with this podcast and the theme, which is like beneath the armor, would you be comfortable walking us through what your inner critic sounds like? Like, when you do quote unquote fail, or when you're in a, what does vulnerability look like to you in a fitness setting? What is scary for you?
Anything novel, anything new is always going to be scary. I think that what ends up happening is because, you know, with the way that my body looks right now, I'm essentially in an end state for a lot of people. I have big muscles. You can see my abs. I've got the tattoos. I can fill out a t-shirt pretty nicely. But there's a substantial vulnerability that comes along with anything new in the gym. Because, you know, the one thing that you'll hear me say a lot when I'm coaching is that your body is your meat vehicle. It's how you get from point A to point B, but it doesn't define who you are. But at the same time, when you're in a gym environment, this is where we are putting the body in a performative display of sorts. And when you are being judged or you are being assessed, it's scary. Because if you fail, then not only are you dealing potentially with the frustration and shame that goes along with that, but it's very easy to misconstrue that everyone is looking at you. The one thing that I have found, and you know, you and I have talked about this in the past, is where I have encountered the most amount of body shame wasn't when I was playing football, but the two most aggravating ones were at a yoga studio and at a gymnastics certification. And it was because the way that I look now. Because I walked into a yoga studio because I really enjoy yoga. And when I was there, they went, yeah, good luck hitting any of these poses. Maybe if you spend a little bit less time in the weight room, a little bit more time stretching, then you'd be able to get a little bit deeper into this. I'm trying really hard. And I am new to this, and I would appreciate the same amount of grace that I would extend to somebody else if they came into the weight room. And then at the gymnastics certification, the first time I ever tried a ring muscle up was in front of 35 seasoned CrossFit coaches. And the instructor said, "Hey, Chris, pop up there." I'm like, "I've never done this before." He said, "Just try your best." I went, "Okay, I'm going to try my best." I did it and I did a ring chin up, and he goes, "See, that's what happens if you just try and fucking bicep your way through that shit. Nice work, biceps. Why don't you watch some more Arnold Schwarzenegger movies?" And so then I dropped down off the rings and tried to hide in the shadows as best I can. And it's just like, who in the fuck are you to determine whether or not I should be capable of something, how I'm shaped? Because I'm trying just as hard as anybody else is. And it's just because I don't fit the body type that's expected to be in that environment that that you end up getting that pushback. I've completely forgotten where we started talking in this place. But it's just like, there's a Jay Baker quote when he was asked about, like, what do you consider to be grace? And it's just loving people where they're at. And the gym is a playground. Everyone wants to play a little bit different. Everyone's going to play a little bit more intensely than the others. And we started talking about fear. And what's scary is trying something new in front of people that you don't necessarily know. And if the one thing that I hope that I can do on every time I'm in a class is just do one thing to make somebody feel a little bit more comfortable, in the same way that I wish somebody would have done something like that for me in the yoga studio, which is, okay, we're moving our bodies. We're having people look at the way that our body moves. It's scary and it can be really intimidating. And, you know, I don't believe that that's inherently a specifically gendered thing. I think when it comes to how people present physically, there's going to be different energies associated to that. But the fear of failure when you're trying something new is real. It can be scary. And if you can just find someone, maybe it's a partner, maybe it's a coach, maybe it's a podcast, where you can say, okay, this is scary. You could fail, but just try and see what happens. And so maybe you find out, you try, you fail, and maybe you try again. Maybe you say, okay, you know, I tried to do the ring muscle up. It's not going to happen today. I'm going to try something else. And just understand that there's more than one path to victory, and just find the one that suits your sensibilities the best.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing all of that, by the way. I really appreciate it. And what you just said, I think resonates probably with so many people on so many different levels, but a few I want to highlight because they're so important, at least in my brain. I think they're incredibly valuable. And the first is that you look like what is currently, again, in society, the stereotypical idea of success in the fitness industry. You look the part. And by the part, I mean what the fitness industry has promoted as what we want to achieve. You are the gold standard. And here you are, as someone who looks like, as you said, everyone else's endpoint in their mind, going, I'm still scared. I experience fear. I experience shame. I experience shame in my body and shame from other people. I am afraid. I am not always happy with how I look or how I move. I'm afraid of fucking up. I'm afraid of looking like a failure. I'm afraid of trying something new and experiencing all these eyes on me, judging me for who I am. Like, that is so empowering for so many people to hear, because people look at people like you and me when we're in the gym especially and go, they must feel so confident. They must love their body. They are successful. Why can't I be like that? I wish I were like that. And to anyone who has ever looked at a fitness, whether it's an influencer or a fitness person or a sports human, and gone, man, I wish I could have their body. I wish I could move that way. I wish I could whatever. Every single one of us experiences our own version of shame and vulnerability and fear and like judgment. It is horrifying. And I'm so sorry that you've had those experiences in the yoga studio and in the gymnastic setting. And what you're doing is so special, because however someone looks, it is never, never, no matter what, period. I'm rarely this opinionated. That's a lie. I'm always this opinionated. But it is never our place to make assumptions about someone's ability, skills, or how they're going to move or act based on how they look. It's not our place to make assumptions. And so I'm so grateful, again, to have you as like a coach who works with me and to learn from you, because what you do so beautifully is go, can you, do you feel like trying? Because not trying is also vulnerable. There's trying and then there's not trying. Like, you could have just as easily gone, yeah, you know what? I don't actually feel like trying a muscle up. I've never done one and I'm not comfortable doing that. And having the confidence to say that takes just as much bravery as going, I've never done one and I'm going to try. Those are both highly sensitive, vulnerable situations.
Well, you essentially told me you must listen to Untamed by Glennon Doyle. And, you know, I was sending you voice notes constantly because I was pulling over to the side of the road constantly, just jot things down, because there were just all these brain blasts. And yeah, she tells the story of her daughter. There are two daughters. One goes to get her ears pierced. And she's like, this is scary. I'm going to try it anyway. And then there's the other daughter who says, this is scary. I'm not going to try it today. Mm-hmm. And both of those are fantastic ways of going about anything, where you're allowed to feel comfort and to feel empowered in what you're doing. And I think that, well, all right, so just use a specific example. Last week when you weren't feeling well, I jumped into coach a bunch of the morning classes. And with the way that things worked out, the name of the instructor did not change on the schedule. And so what ended up happening is a lot of people who are used to you signed in to seeing me. Now, we have kind of similar hairstyles. I have a few more tattoos than you do, but my voice is a couple octaves lower. I'm very aware of how I look in the same way, because I tend to get the same reaction walking down, you know, walking around the gym that, say, a pit bull would walking down the street. There's going to be two ways of looking at it, where people go, "Ooh, pit bull, I'm going to give you all the cuddles." You know, this is just a dog that looks a certain way and that doesn't define, you know, its attitude. And then there are other people who say, that's a pit bull. I have created all these presuppositions of what this being's attitude is going to be based on the way that it's shaped. And so I had a bunch of people log in to those classes and the eyes got big and it's like, okay, I'm many things, but I am not Alice. I'm still part of ABH. And this is still about being empathetic to where it is that you're at. And I love lifting heavy. It's my favorite thing. I want everyone to experience the joy of what it is to conquer gravity. But I don't need you to do that every day. Maybe, like, because, you know, you put it beautifully in one of your earlier podcasts, is like, who in the hell are we to tell you how you need to work out today? Because, you know, you've got it tattooed on you, which is, let's get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Exercise itself is anathema to human biology. We're dealing with the same hardware that existed 40,000 years ago. We have not convinced our tissues that refrigeration is a thing and that food is guaranteed tomorrow. Your body doesn't want to exercise because it's worried it's going to die. But if you can just say, okay, your body's uncomfortable, and the longer you can stay outside of this comfort zone, the more opportunity that you have to grow. So you might, like, for me, if you say, I'm going to take you outside of your comfort zone, I'm going to load up a barbell. That's all I need to hear. I get to lift the barbell. I will go as far outside of this comfort zone as you need to, because I have my trusty stick. But if you say, I'm going to take you outside your comfort zone, we're going to go for a run, this is going to be a unique challenge. I am not going to stray as far from my comfort zone as I normally would, but I am going to try. However, similar to what you were talking about with Kaylee yesterday, Kaylee's got a bunch of knee issues And she knows exactly what her body is capable of. So when someone as a coach says, I'm going to take you outside of your comfort zone, we're going to squat, she's going to put up her hand and say, this is not appropriate for me. And she is going to know what is going to suit her body best. And so when you look at the gym bro who is big and muscly and lean, the one thing that I hope I can convey is people who are shaped like me, we have perfected all the mistakes of the fitness industry. We've probably tried the entire supplement store. We have done every muscle mag workout, and we know how much of it does not work. And what I'm hoping to do is get people to, you know, learn from my mistakes. But most importantly, what fitness is about is finding joy in that suffering. Understanding that, you know, when you're suffering through a workout, and whatever degree that is, that's in between you and the voice in your head, there is going to be some purpose to that. And it's whatever direction you choose to point yourself.
I love that. If out of curiosity, I'm wondering if you're open to this. I would love to do from your perspective, what things are helpful for you personally to hear as someone who looks like you and acts like you in a gym? So I'll unpack that a little bit further. Like, let's go back 10 years ago, let's say you're at the gym and someone who works at that gym sees you. What are some things about you that you would like that person to know? Or how would you like to be approached in a gym? What would feel like care for you?
I think it would just end up being exactly the same way that you would approach anybody else. That, you know, I would hope that I'd be approached with the same level of conversational respect as anybody else. You know, there are always going to be people like everyone. There's always going to be stereotypes and presuppositions about people in the gym based on the way that they are shaped. But
maybe our end state. I'm gonna fight you on that one. I want that to change. Like, that's why we're here, right? Is like, there should not be, though, in my opinion.
I agree. So maybe I'll recontextualize where I'll say traditionally there are presuppositions that go along with that. And I think things are starting to change in a very big way. Especially within the past 5 to 10 years, where, you know, I think that we can all visualize very specifically where, say, the girl wanders from the girl weight section or the cardio section 10 years ago into the weight section, and then all the dudes giving the side eye and saying, oh, you don't belong here, and things like that. That is a mindset that is dying out in a big way, and I'm happy to see it go. Because I do want everyone to be treated with the same grace and respect as everyone else. Male, female, non-binary, in between, queer, straight, makes no difference. Those markers of your personhood have no place within the gym. It's, we are here to achieve something. We're going to get a little sweaty. We're going to get a little bit uncomfortable, and that needs to be celebrated. So to me, 10 years ago, if I'm lifting a little bit too loud, for instance, and I need to get called out, I don't want to be treated any different. I don't want to disturb anyone. I don't want to intimidate anyone, but at the same time, I don't want to be avoided either. You know, I want everyone to have a good time.
I love that. And I really appreciate that, like, optimism about the future too, because I think that's so necessary. And I admittedly do have a tendency to come at the fitness industry with a little bit like a very, very critical lens, if I'm honest, which is that, yes, things are changing. Could they change faster and bigger and better? Yes, but they are changing. But one thing that is hard for me as someone who is non-binary and like going into a gym is how people receive me is different currently than how people receive you. And I love what you're saying. I think that the end goal is for everyone to be treated the same, like with the same respect and communicated with the same way. But I'll give you an example of a mistake that I've personally made and an experience that I've also had in terms of how I was treated. So I used to work with kids with disabilities. That was my background in grad school. And I ran a program for like kids of a variety of ages, of a variety of abilities. And I had one participant who was in a wheelchair, who was a paraplegic. And I incorrectly, like such a mistake on my end, made an unintentional subconscious assessment of this person. And there were push-ups planned in a workout that we were doing that I had planned for the workout. And rather than saying, are you familiar with push-ups? Are you comfortable? How do you feel about push-ups? Maybe how do you feel about push-ups is the question to ask. I don't know what the best way of asking that is. I made an assumption that they could not do push-ups the way we see push-ups in our mind in the gym, and offered an alternative as a shoulder press. And this kid was like, I can do push-ups. Don't tell me I can't do push-ups. And I was like, yeah, okay, cool. Like, can I see? I'm curious. And like got themselves out of their chair and proceeded to do push-ups on the floor, no problem. That like just body-wise like had a slightly different position, but hammered out like a set of 10 pretty great push-ups. And I was like, holy shit, I'm so embarrassed. I'm so ashamed because I came with the best intentions. My intention was not to other or shame this person or make them feel that they could not perform something someone else was doing. I just had my own idea of what someone who looked like that kid in a wheelchair would be able to do. And fuck, was I wrong? I was so wrong. And so what could I have done instead? Where did that notion even come from? And it's now my responsibility to question my own preconceived notions and judgments of people. So if I see someone who looks like you, the reality is right now, like I'm working on this, but I will likely still make an assumption that I am going to get corrected by you. I am going to get looks from you. I am going to get like, oh God, someone's going to mansplain some stuff to me. Like I make that assumption about someone like you, but that's an incorrect assumption. Like us being friends, I'm like, you wouldn't do that to me. You wouldn't address me that way. But in the same breath, like I look the way I do. I am non-binary. These are things that people don't know about me, but I go into a gym and people still assume that I'm a she. People still assume she, her. People assume a certain level of like fitness from me. Like I showed up at a gym in person a couple of weeks ago and was having like an off day and just like rested a little longer during a set. And the coach was like, oh, what's wrong with you? Like what's going on today? And I was like, I'm just fucking tired. And they proceeded to be like, oh, she's got it. Like, look at her go. And I'm like, my pronouns are they, them. Also, I'm dying on the floor. So like, I'm just struggling. So what, I guess like a different way I want to frame that question for anyone listening to this that might find this like helpful, whether they're a coach or a human, is what are some ways we can create a more generally inclusive fitness setting. So as just a participant, let's not go from the coaching perspective, but so you walk into a gym with a perceived set of notions, how can we create a safer fitness environment? What are some things, whether physical or mental or communication skills, that would be helpful for any human being to have? That's a loaded question.
Well, I think the one thing that you pointed out there is that as we're trying to create the most open and inclusive environment as possible in the fitness space, mistakes are going to be made. I've got such a huge asset in having such a wonderful and caring friend in you, because I'm aware of non-binary people, but in terms of their lived experience and the reality of what goes on with that, I don't know. This is not something that I've ever experienced. And what I want to do is I want to be the best friend and ally to you, where not only am I, you know, interacting with the way that makes you feel empowered and supported, but I also want to make sure that when we are, you know, out and about, going for a walk, at a restaurant, in a gym, wherever, that you feel that same support coming from me. And I get to ask you questions because I don't know. And the one thing that I've always been really grateful for you about is just you're always willing to have the uncomfortable conversation with an open mind and heart about all of it, where you're willing to educate me as opposed to instruct and inform. Where rather than saying, I will be addressed as such, and this is exactly how we're going to do it, you personalize it. And in the same way that you can encounter me in the gym, and I'll be, you know, I want to make everyone feel supported. And I want everyone, like, if you need a spot, I'm here for you. If you're doing an exercise wrong, you're going to hurt yourself. To like, if you're completely cat back on a deadlift, I'm going to say, have you considered pulling that chest back? But if you're deadlifting your own way, just that's your thing. I'm going to leave you to that. But the one thing, I saw this on Instagram where this lady that I follow, Ash, she was at a gym and she was in the middle of a set, and the guy walks into frame, this, you know, 50-60 year old dude, and starts talking about how much he used to bench press back in his day. That happened to me last week, where when you're dealing with this older generation, where they're like, it's always guys, they need to tell you how good they used to be. And there are going to be mansplainers. There are going to be frustrating situations like that. There are going to be douchebag gym bros that look exactly the way that I do. And in that situation, it's my responsibility, you know, as someone who, like, well, I see it as my responsibility, as someone who is of the gym bro kin, to make sure that I am being supportive and inclusive out loud. You know, one of the coolest things that I've ever seen is, I've told you this story, when I was playing football for my high school, we had an openly gay guy who had made the team as a wide receiver. And after our first practice as a team, one of the guys on the team got in his face and dropped the 6-letter F word on him. And that word would like rendered the whole dressing room silent, because no one knew how to react except the team captain, who came running over and cracked that guy across the jaw. And so now this guy who had said the word is now down on the floor, and the captain said, who he is outside of this dressing room makes no difference. He is our teammate and we're going to respect him accordingly. Don't you ever talk that way to someone on this team again. And that is an attitude that carried forward. Like, you know, that guy who dropped that word, his attitude about a lot of things changed that day, because it's not always going to be a matter of hitting people in the mouth. It's not going to always be a matter of wagging a finger at somebody. But if you can explain to somebody, this is a behavior that is not acceptable any longer. This is something that is diminishing somebody else's sense of value or their comfort in this space. It's a matter of having those hard conversations. And, you know, I know that in this process, in terms of, you know, starting to create the most open environment that I can, I'm going to get things wrong. I don't have to be happy about that, but I do have to be realistic about it. And so when those things happen, when we're coming up short of our own expectations that way, then we have to own it, acknowledge it, and then make sure that when we lose, we're not losing the lesson. So, okay, I made a presupposition about what this person was capable of or what their experience is based on the way that their meat vehicle presents. I was wrong in that assumption. So rather than, you know, just getting frustrated with yourself and moving on, acknowledge it, apologize from it, and learn and grow and develop.
I love that. I think that actually really beautifully kind of answered the initial question of how do we create more inclusive spaces? And from both of our perspectives, I think it sounds like it's an unclear answer. It's a very, very nuanced, complicated answer, but some criteria that are absolutely required and necessary are a curiosity and an openness about other people's A, experiences, B, identity, and C, not like checking ourselves on our own preconceived notions. So rather than like, we have to be aware of that. We have to be aware of that before engaging with people, like rather than, oh, this person looks like this other person I know, so they must be like this, advancing with a curiosity and asking that person questions. So asking questions, coming to the table with curiosity. And equally, I think another part of it is that ownership of mistakes, because admitting a mistake is hard for a lot of people. It really, really is. It bruises our ego. It hits us in a hard way. And I think if more people took those things less personally and instead acknowledged that we are humans, we are flawed, we are going to make mistakes, but we are ultimately all doing the best we can with the skills we currently have available, but silence is not an option. And this is where like things get hard for me and complicated, is because they're like, are repercussions for speaking up when you are a certain race or a certain gender? I hate saying that, but currently like it's uncomfortable for me to constantly correct people on my pronouns. Also, I don't know how people will respond. There is some like shame that comes up with that. I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's a Black coach, and they were like, I don't want to be the person to bring up race because it's uncomfortable to be the Black person being like, you're being racist. Like these are hard conversations to have. So there's responsibility on both fronts. Like there has to be this give and take of like, I'm not going to understand what you're going through, but I'm going to try. And I trust that you will correct me. I equally trust that you are going to give me that same respect and try. And it's coming back to vulnerability here. Oh my God. Like it is hella vulnerable to trust like strangers in the gym and that they have the best intentions, and then that they're not going to have like a negative reaction to you when you correct them or you when you like have that hard conversation, because it's this fear on both sides. There was fear for both people. There's the fear of being wrong. There's the fear of correcting. There's the fear of judgment, like on both parties. And it has to start somewhere. It has to start with one of those parties extending the olive branch and then being the person who speaks up. And it also comes down to like organizations and systems and gyms, people who work in gyms and coaches being willing to have that conversation and step up and act differently. Like ask people how they want to be coached, ask people how they learn best, ask people what they're comfortable doing, ask them if there are movements they don't want to do, ask people their pronouns, ask people if there are any fears they would be willing to like share to make the environment more comfortable. Like curiosity could help so much, I think.
Well, I think what you touched on there was really important when it comes to how do we start dealing with this from different people's perspectives, where it's whether you discussing, you know, pronouns as someone who's non-binary or someone of color discussing, you know, the way that race is discussed. There is a clear and evident issue when we're dealing with institutions and sociological norms that need to be broken down and addressed. But the biggest advantage that I've had is being able to talk to you as an individual about it. And the way that we are going to see this shift happen is uncomfortable but supportive conversations on the part of what you and I have had and I've had with other people, which is like, I love having you in my life. I love you as a friend, and I want to do everything I can to like to show and make you feel that love and support. And if that is me being a little bit more mindful of my vocabulary around you, then that's what I'm going to do, because that's the respect that you deserve. And when it comes to, you know, issues relative to gender or queer folk or race issues, it's dealing with people as individuals and having that move forward. So the best thing that I can do as an individual, as a gym bro, is twofold. Number one, listen to everyone's experience, no matter what they look like or where they're coming from, under the auspices that they have something to teach me. And more importantly, what we talked about at the top, I have three sons. there, I have three white males, and we've had a conversation with them a bunch about queerness and gender identity. And like, there was one time where Kai, when he was seven, he's my oldest, he came home and he said, "Dad, what's gay?" And I said, "You know how your friend has two dads and they are married?" And he said, "Yes, those two people are gay. They are homosexual." And he goes, "So does that mean that I can marry a boy?" I'm like, "Do you want to marry a boy?" And he goes, "I mean, maybe. Is that all right?" I'm like, "Yeah, man, it's totally fine." And I'm not going to be able to reach up to the higher echelons of, you know, the institutions that are currently in place that may create this, you know, limiting, you know, closed-minded, you know, environment. But what I can do is make sure that when my sons grow up, and if they need to express themselves differently, or they experience someone else who does that or has a different living experience, that they're going to they're going to say, "I may not know everything about this person, but I know enough that they're worthy of respect." And converse, and you know, because I have to bring everything back to gym stuff, specifically when it comes to lifting weights, whoever happens to be listening to this right now, wherever you're at, whoever you are, you can deadlift 400 pounds. You can do it. All right. You maybe not be able to do it today, but if we set, you know, it's going to be a matter of time scale and patience and putting in the work. It's not always going to be a grind and it's not always going to be super fun. But if we make these small incremental changes, then we are making this progressive overload towards a better future. And so we're not going to be able to tear down the institution from the top down. We're going to build it back properly from the bottom up. And so, you know, consequently, when it comes to, you know, the way that I want to be treated or the way that you want to be treated, I was a bouncer for 7 years. And what I found was there's two kinds of bouncers. There are the people who get paid well and the people who like to fight. And when I started working, I was 17 years old, so it was illegal for me to work there. So I had to be on my very best behavior. And the thing that I learned very quickly is when people were drunk or hostile, and I told them that it was time to go, whatever emotion that I approached them with, I was going to get back tenfold. So if I grabbed them very roughly and I said, "Hey, you got to listen to me right now," they're going to blow up and they're going to fight me every step of the way. But instead, if I approach like, "Hey, looks like you've had a little bit too much to drink. So here's what, like, this is what we're going to do from here." And if the whole thing starts as a conversation, you know, if a guy's being, if someone's being drunk and boisterous, they're probably not trying to get kicked out of the bar. They're just a little bit too much in their own head in this closed system. And so, you know, just a firm guiding hand to explain what you're doing isn't ideal. This is what I'd like to see to have happen and to create a better environment for everyone around you. And so, you know, what I'm grateful for is when I've had questions about race, about misogyny, about living through the queer experience, as, you know, this becomes a much more open dialogue, is I have the friends that I do where I, you know, can say, "Okay, I'm a cishet white guy in North America. I have a very different lived experience than you do. These are the things that I'm experiencing. I would really like to hear it from you." And I think that having these conversations on social media, everyone wants to break it down to the soundbite, you know, and there's always going to be trolls and people who want to agitate. But these interpersonal conversations, these long form discussions, whether it's on podcasts or YouTube videos or just having a chat with friends where you can just put your ego aside and say, "I have no fucking idea what it is to be non-binary. But I know that it is who you are. And if I understand your experience, I will understand you better. So not only can I, you know, be a better friend to you, be of more support, when I encounter these things elsewhere, I will know how to treat fellow human beings with the respect that they deserve, which is the same respect that I'd be looking for myself, my sons, and everyone.
Chris, I'm so grateful for you. Like everything you just said, this whole conversation, but at the end there, like means so much to me. And I'm so, again, grateful for you as well and your friendship and getting to work with you every day, because this, like, the light that you bring to our world and the openness that you have, I rarely meet people as open as you, where you, and this, like, the last thing I'll say on this, but for, so everyone knows, like, Chris leads by example so wonderfully. And when you reached out to me and you were like, hey, I actually don't know what it means to be non-binary, are you open to having a conversation with me about it and telling me about your experience? Like, you lead by example. And so, like, thank you so much for your time today to talk more about your experiences and your side of the story as well. And having this hard conversation on this podcast, because it's invaluable. So thank you so much for your time today. This has been wonderful.
Yeah. Had a great time. Feel long-winded, but I was like, I don't know. I was excited to share this experience.
Absolutely. And so if anyone wants to reach out to you, what are the best ways they can do that?
You can get in touch with me. My email address is chris@abhmovement.com. On Instagram, which I have a tendency to spend too much time on, is murricane_105, 105 being my weight class in strongman. So if you happen to follow the official strongman game, it's going to be their second week of November, check me out. I'm going to be the guy in the Canadian flag booty shorts.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so hyped to just like cheer you on. And just so everyone heard that right, it's Murricane, like hurricane, but with an M. And I will put that in the description of this podcast too, so everyone can find it. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to listen to this episode. I so appreciate it. And if you have more topics you would like to hear about or want to learn more, you can find us at abhmovement.com, ABH Movement on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook, or hit us up in our Empath Movement Facebook group. Have an amazing day today, and thank you so much again.